It's This Week in Enterprise Tech, our 400th episode. That's right. We'll celebrate with Mr. Brian Chee and Mr. Curtis Franco. We have some great topics. Now, have you and your organization been wondering about how to benchmark your cloud performance? Well, with some recent developments in benchmarking, you might just be able to do that. Now, during the pandemic, we've seen some studies to show some of the trends that are going on, and there are new ones that are actually outlining new InfoSec job training trends as well. Curtis will take us through that. And our 400th episode, we have a great guest, Ohad Maislish. He's CEO and co-founder of M0. He's going to take us through the next generation of DevOps. Is it self-service? Well, you'll have to find out. Check out our 400th episode. It's Wyatt on the set. This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you from LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes security simple for your remote workforce. Check out lastpass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week Enterprise Tech, episode 400, recorded July 3rd, 2020. Automatic for the DevOps. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Thinks Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. For 10% off and 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit. Enter the code TWIT in the How Do You Hear About Us box. And by Worldwide Technology and App Dynamics, who together help you build and deliver high-quality applications at velocity. Are you ready to transform your business by updating or adding a mobile app to improve your customer experience? How about streamlining your work to be more efficient with apps? WWT makes your vision a reality. Visit WWT.com/twit1 to get started. And by Red Hat OpenShift. Red Hat OpenShift is the Kubernetes platform that provides a trusted foundation for the on-premises, hybrid, and multi-cloud deployments today's enterprises demand. Go to OpenShift.com/enterprise now to check out its features. Welcome to Twit, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that's dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I am your host, Louis Moreski, your guide through this big, giant world of the enterprise. And welcome to our 400th episode of Twit. That's right, 400 glorious episodes of enterprise, IT news, guests, and a ton of great discussions surrounding that all. And let me tell you, the Twit team has been the reason for its success. So let me start by bringing back in the pros, the experts in their field, starting with my friends, bringing back Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's the Enterprise IT News juggernaut over there at Senior. He's also a senior editor at Dark Reading. Curtis, always great to have you, my friend. Thank you for being part of Twit.
It is absolutely great to be here and to have been able to say that I'm here for the better part of 8 years. It is a great team, a great podcast. And I have to say, we have one of the best audiences in the whole wide world. So it makes for a great thing. And especially when it's hot and rainy outside here in Florida, there's no place I'd rather be.
Now, you're also preparing for a show coming up for, right? That's pretty soon.
Yeah, I've begun doing interviews with the people who are going to be making presentations at Black Hat. And I'm also looking forward to being able to do some interviews with the folks who will be making presentations at Virtual DEF CON. So as you say, that's coming up in just about a month. And we're going to try to help people get into the mood. I had a great interview today with someone who's giving a presentation on the security danger presented by implantable medical devices. I'd love to get our co-host Chiebert's thing on what it would be like if you had to bring an insulin pump into a skiff.
Oh. That's right. Well, as we've seen from the back noise there, we have not one but two amazing captains of this journey. He's also our amazing producer, our co-host, the geek in paradise, Mr. Brian Chee. Chiebert, always amazing to have you here. What do you think? What do you think of that that implanted device?
Well, the big rule is it can't radiate. So that means if the insulin pump has a Bluetooth interface, it's got to be turned off. Either that or the security officer is going to wrap it in tinfoil. That's funny.
Right. Well, what's been keeping you busy the last week or so?
Actually, well, it's been packing and more packing. I finally got my 3D printer, my Formlabs dried out, cleaned up, and packed away into boxes. And it's all ready to head to Florida with me someday. Have no idea when. With the second wave happening, I'm not real sure I'm moving anytime soon, but I keep living in hope. And it's my 59th birthday. Thank you very much for all
happy
the well
birthday,
wishes from
birthday.
Fans and friends.
So we have lots to celebrate here. We not only have Twyatt's 400th episode, we have a little cake here, but we also have to sing happy birthday to Cheebert as well. Happy birthday,
Cheebert.
Please don't. Well, we have some great topics for our 400th episode. Have you and your organization been trying to determine and maybe measure grade cloud performance while we talk about some recent developments in benchmarking the cloud? That's right, benchmarking it. Now, also during the pandemic, there's been some studies going around and showing some of the trends going on during that period. And there's new ones that outlines new InfoSec job training trends. That's why Curtis is going to take us through that. Plus, we also have a great guest, Ohad Maisla. She's CEO and co-founder of EmpZero to talk about the next generation of DevOps. Is it self-service? Well, you'll have to find out. Stay tuned. But first, it's been a really busy week in This Week in Enterprise. And so let's go ahead and jump into this week's blips. Now, between a deadly pandemic whose reach and scale are unprecedented in our lifetimes and many other events, the first 6 months of the year have been remarkable, to say the least. And all of this has had a profound impact on cybersecurity dynamics and risks, not to mention digital attacks. So much has happened in cyberspace over the past 6 months that it's daunting to think about what the back half of the year will bring. For now, let's reflect on the major hacks and breaches that have occurred so far, as we prepare ourselves for whatever's coming. Now, COVID-19 has changed the way people around the world live, work, and learn, which has had a significant impact on how hackers craft their attacks and which vulnerabilities they target. Now, the pandemic is a boon to nation-state spies conducting digital espionage. It has also fueled state-backed phishing, criminal hacking, and scams. Now, the World Health Organization, for example, was targeted in March by an unknown attacker who bombarded the organization with phishing messages in an attempt to access its digital systems. Now, in April, an Iran-linked hacker were actually caught launching phishing attacks against the pharmaceutical company Gilead Sciences, which has been working to develop and distribute treatments for COVID-19. Now, scams and digital extortion attempts like ransomware have also flourished globally during the pandemic. In fact, Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison announced in June that the country's public and private sectors have been grappling with a months-long battery of attacks and cyber attacks. Now, government officials have avoided publicly attributing the attacks beyond a, quote, sophisticated state-based actor, but local media reported that many believe China is actually responsible. Now, in another sector, researchers discovered a total of 845 gigabytes of user data from 9 specialized dating apps sitting open and accessible on the public internet. Now, the trove represented 2.5 million individual records that were likely linked to hundreds of thousands of users. Now, though the incident is not known to have resulted in a hack or breach, the exposure is still partially significant because the dating apps Threesome, Cougary, Bear, X-Paul, BBW, Dating, Casual X, Sugar D, and Herpes Dating, and G-Hunt cater to specific populations, and the data included also health information in some of those. Now, the hacktivist collective Anonymous resurfaced with a 269 gigabyte data leak of the U.S. law enforcement documents and internal communications as well. Now, the activist group Distributed Denial of Secrets, or DDoS Secrets, published all of this on the Juneteenth holiday as well. Now, the trove of more than a million files is being called blue leaks, includes emails, audio recordings, video footage, and law enforcement planning and intelligence documents from over 200 states, local, and federal agencies. Now, in May, the notorious GRU hacking group Sandworm was back in the news with even more attacks. This time, it exploited vulnerable email servers as part of the sum of its attacks, possibly against the Georgia state. Now, all of this, which one do you think we should watch this year? Which one of these, which one of the nation states, or which one of the attackers, hackers? Some think It's actually an Iranian state actor. Why? Well, researchers published findings that Iranian hacking groups have been pelting the U.S. grid with digital attacks, attempting to gain access inside electric utilities and oil and gas companies. Now, in the beginning of June, Google's threat analysis group said that the Iranian-linked actor Apt 35, a.k.a. Charming Kitten, had launched phishing attacks against election campaigns as well. Now, if this is a foreshadowing of what's to come in 2020, you might want to lock down the hatches and get ready for the ride.
Well, attackers compromised dozens of news websites as part of a new ransomware campaign. Attackers recently compromised dozens of U.S. newspaper websites belonging to the same parent company and used the sites to distribute malicious code for downloading ransomware on networks belonging to targeted organizations across multiple sectors. Several major U.S. organizations that were recently found infected with the malware appear to have been initially compromised when their employees visited one of the news websites, according to Symantec. The security vendor last week had reported discovering Sock Ghoulish, a JavaScript-based malware masquerading as a software update on networks belonging to at least 31 major enterprise customers. A Russia-based group called Evil Corp, I love that name, by the way, is using the malware as part of an attack sequence to download a new ransomware strain called Wasted Locker on target networks. The tools being used in the campaign include PowerShell scripts, the PSExec Windows Sysinternals tool, and the Windows Management Instrumentation Command Line Utility, WMIC.exe, which is being used to disable real-time monitoring and scanning of downloaded files. Among the Symantec customers impacting the campaign are 11 publicly listed organizations, including 8 that made the Fortune 500. In its initial report, updated this week, Symantec said its researchers has discovered at least 150 legitimate but previously hacked websites that were being used to host Sock Ghoulish and to download it on systems belonging to visitors to all 150 sites.
For some good news. So some police have rolled up a huge crime network in Europe after they managed to infiltrate a popular encrypted chat app. Hundreds of alleged drug dealers and other criminals are in custody today after police in Europe infiltrated an encrypted chat system reportedly used by thousands to discuss illegal operations. The total failure of this ostensibly secure method of communication will likely have a chilling effect on the shadowy industry of crime-focused technology. Operation Venetic was reported by various police agencies, major local news outlets, and by Motherboard in an especially vibrant form, quoting extensively people apparently from within the groups affected. The operation involved hundreds of officers working across numerous agencies in France, the Netherlands, the UK, and other countries. It actually started back in 2017 and culminated 2 months ago when a service called EncroChat was hacked and the messages of tens of thousands of users exposed to the police scrutiny. I'm going to use this story to make a point that no matter how well-intended a software engineer is, somewhere, someone, somehow is going to break your encryption. So the moral of the story is that purposely putting in a weakness, aka backdoors into encryption systems, might not be such a great idea, especially when a purposely secure system got owned in this state.
A telecommunications company, AT&T, found itself for the second time at the end of a SIM jacking lawsuit after a customer accused it of allowing hackers to swap his SIM card. Now, the security breach resulted in the theft of cryptocurrency worth $1.9 million and the compromise of a highly sensitive personal and financial information set of documents. Now, claims are saying the AT&T's lack of security allowed hackers to enter his wallet and steal crypto coins that were indeed his entire life savings. Now, according to the lawsuit filed in California, all of this appears to be an elaborate scheme by fraudsters. Now, it's unclear exactly how the thieves replaced the user's mobile SIM But the lawsuit suggests that two AT&T employees were in cahoots and helped the phone number be transferred to their new device. Now, specifically, he lost service on his AT&T cell phone, so he visited one of the carrier's stores in New York to figure out the problem. Now, within minutes of getting the service back, the hackers were able to gain control of the user's number. Now, it seems that it might not be the last time we hear about simjacking attacks in the near future.
Well, businesses are investing in cloud security tools despite their concerns. New research shows businesses wary of cloud-based security tools are accelerating adoption, in large part to accommodate more employees working from home. As investments continue to increase, concerns for unauthorized access and data privacy and sovereignty remain. Researchers with Exabeam polled 131 security practitioners in the UK to learn about their cloud security adoption plans and learned that more than half, or 56%, have migrated between a quarter and half of all their security tools to the cloud. And a quarter of them did the same for half to three quarters of their security tools. Of those who made the transition, 88% said they chose to accelerate to support remote workers. The rise in adoption doesn't correlate with a decrease in concern. Most, nearly 90% of respondents, said they still considered the transition to be risky, and nearly half said it's high risk. This finding stands in contrast to the 87% of security pros who said they're, quote, well-equipped, end quote, to handle cloud-based migration. This massive swing to cloud-based tools has put pressure on security leaders to address the growth of cloud-focused threats and identify gaps in visibility, protection, and the extent of their security team's knowledge. IDC research shows that of those organizations affected by cloud data breaches, 72% have suffered at least five, while 43% were hit more than 10 times within an 18-month period.
Sprint customers say goodbye to their 5G service. T-Mobile has switched off the Sprint 5G network 3 months after the carrier's $26.5 billion merger with Sprint was completed on April 1st. It's redeploying the airwaves as part of its own 5G service, but unless Sprint's 5G customers have a Samsung Galaxy S25G, they're going to need a new phone to use T-Mobile's 5G network. Though T-Mobile already made this move in New York City, is now switching off Sprint's entire 5G network, which was also living in parts of Chicago, Los Angeles, Phoenix, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston, Kansas City, and Miami. T-Mobile is already switching the 2.5 gigahertz spectrum back on, and it's available now for 5G in some areas of L.A., New York, Chicago, Houston, and Philadelphia. Quote, we are working to quickly redeploy, optimize, and test the 2.5 gigahertz spectrum before lighting it up on the T-Mobile network, according to a T-Mobile spokesman in an emailed statement to Ars Technica. The carrier is offering replacement phones for former Sprint 5G customers. Customers who lease or finance a 5G phone at more than $10 a month will be given a Galaxy S20 5G for $10 a month after the $31.67 per month credit on an 18-month lease. Customers who own, lease, or finance a 5G phone for less than $10 a month will be given a Galaxy S20 5G for $0 a month after $41.67 per month credit on their new 18-month lease. All I can say is to the Sprint early adopters is bummer, dude, and stay tuned for changes, more changes, post-merger.
Now, when public health experts started recommending social distancing to reduce the spread of COVID-19, the goal was to actually place people out of harm's way. That's right. But the policy has forced many domestic violence victims to possibly face a far more insidious danger, isolating with an abuser. That's right. Security researchers tell CyberScoop that data is showing a rise in invasive surveillance software known as stalkerware. Now, applications that can actually spy on a partner's text, calls, social media use, and geolocation information since the coronavirus pandemic began. Now, the increase detected is even though abusers are much more likely to be sharing same living space as their victims. Now, three antivirus companies tracking Stalkerware globally told CyberScoop they saw an increase in Stalkerware detections just after governments at all levels put social distancing measures in place. Now, security service companies are saying Stalkerware detections on their respective customer devices spiked by 190% and 99% respectively. Now, under normal circumstances, Stalkerware can make it difficult for domestic violence victims to get support since it can monitor targets every move on their phone. But during a pandemic, Stalkerware can make it near impossible for victims to get help since an internet connected device may be very nearly be the only lifeline to seek outside support during the global health crisis. Now, three Stalkerware applications that antivirus firms have frequently detected during the pandemic all use their inability to be detected or removed as a selling point. Now, listen to this. Two applications flagged by mobile security firm Lookout, mSpy and MobileSpy, list on their website that the programs can be hidden on the device. Now, Avera detected another program, Cerberus, that advertises it's impossible to remove from a device. Now, groups are working to limit the damage of Stalkerware, and although the pandemic may be keeping many domestic violence survivors from their normal support systems, in at least one case, society's shift to telework has helped one survivor discover they're being watched. Now, Operation Safe Escape, founded in 2016, is out there to help domestic violence victims escape abusers without leaving digital crumbs, is actually working on ways victims can communicate safely during the pandemic. Now, worthwhile organizations continue to need support to scale their efforts, so this might be a definite time, if any, to get involved. Well, folks, that does it for the Blips. Next up, the Bites. But before we get to the Bites, we have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech. And that's Thinks Canary. Now, with everything that's going on in the world, Thinks Canary wants you to know they have your back. They're here for you. Data breaches are on the rise, and companies usually find out too late they have been compromised, even after spending millions on IT and security. Now, Canary is designed to be installed, configured, and most likely forgotten in minutes. Now, if you need to be alerted, Canary gives you the option of deciding how you are told and what's going on, whether it's over email or text message, right there on the console, or even using collab services like Slack, using webhooks, syslog, or even just using their API. Now, alerts should be dead simple and easy to work with, conforming to your needs, not the other way around, and Thinks Canary has made that possible. You won't be inundated with alerts either. You get to only get to see the alerts that actually matter. Now, two things all companies should know when it comes to data breaches. Hackers take the path of least resistance. We talk about that a lot, which is technically sometimes your staff. And it takes on average 191 days for a company to realize there's been a data breach. Now, you're probably wondering, how does Canary help? How does it work here? Well, here's how it works. It looks identical to a router, a switch, a NAS server, a Linux box, a Windows server, so that attackers can't tell the difference. Now, Thinks Canary's, they don't look vulnerable on your network. They look valuable. They look appealing. They look like those things that people want to attack. Now, you can put fake files on them or enroll them in Active Directory. Now, what attackers investigate further, they give themselves away. You're instantly notified and alerted of them of coming into their network. Now, the company behind Canary has been in the security game for almost 2 decades, long time. And they train companies, militaries, and governments on how to break into networks and have used the knowledge to build Canary. Now, Thinks Canaries are deployed over the world on all 7 continents and are one of the best tools against data breaches. Now, having tried this system out, it's amazing how simple it is to get started by quickly adding these things on your network. Just throw a couple out there. Do your organization a favor. Get some of these right now. Visit canary.tools/twit, and for just $7,500 per year, you'll get 5 canaries, your own hosted console, upgrade support, and maintenance. Now, if you use the code TWIT in the How Do You Hear About Us box, you'll get 10% off for life, for life. You know, you'll love Thinks Canary, but if you're not happy, you can always return Canaries with their 2-month money back guarantee for a full refund. That's canary.tools/twit, and enter the code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box. And we thank Thinks Canary for their support of This Week Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the Bites. Now, we all use the cloud. I use the cloud. We're using the cloud right now. And sometimes our services, they show signs of stress, right? Now, we want to know, where's the bottleneck? Is it really easy to find out? It's not, right? It's, to be honest, measuring cloud performance is difficult, and it's not transparent by any means. And there are so-called, quote-unquote, benchmarking applications out there, like Primate Labs, Geekbench 3, and other programs. But unfortunately, they aren't ideal. They're not ideal for testing the cloud. While there's a light in the very long, almost endless tunnel we call the cloud, now Principal Technologies and Benchmark XPRT development community have worked together to release the Cloud XPRT Preview. Now, Cloud XPRT Preview is a free benchmark that's supposed to accurately measure infrastructure as a service cloud performance. Now, the beta program includes web, microservices, and data analytics workloads, and testers can use metrics from both workloads to compare IaaS stacks, both hardware and software performance. Now, armed with this information, you actually can decide which cloud provider and which stack is right for you. Now, within this microservices web workload, a simulated user logs in to the web application, and then it provides a couple things, a selection of stock options. It performs a Monte Carlo simulation with those stocks and presents the virtual user with interesting stock options. Now, the workload reports performance in transactions per second, which testers can actually use to compare IaaS stacks directly and to evaluate whether a particular configuration can be met their needs as well as their service level agreement thresholds. Now, the data analytics workload calculates the XGBoost machine learning model training time as well. This is a gradient boosting framework for ML-based regression and classification problems. Now, it's not easy measuring public cloud performance. So much depends on exactly which cloud configuration you use and your workloads, and it's hard to make judgments. But at almost none of the existing servers and system benchmarks are really up to the par and up to that challenge. That's where most feel that Cloud XPRT is the first step to accurate results. Now, I want to bring my co-host in here because it kind of sounds like an advertisement because it sounds like they're going to solve everything here. It sounds like to me, Cheebert, I want to throw this to you first, that it's their first attempt, right? And it sounds like they might not necessarily represent all the configuration variances out there, maybe even the baseline templates. Where do they need to go from here, do you think?
In reading all these things, the one thing that seems to be missing is that so-called control group. When we start doing a lot of experiments with performance, you know, when Kurt and I were doing a lot of these InfoWorld performance tests, one of the things we tried to do was make sure we had sometimes what we'd call a zero run. So that within what I would do is within any cloud, I would have an untouched system that we could start the test with, just point it at it, make sure we have that control run so we know what the baseline is for that configuration. So we know what it's expected out of that. Then we go and try and test the customer's infrastructure. Right now, that's what I don't see. I was kind of digging around on their website, and it's like, where's the control group? So this is almost like saying, well, this is the world's fastest widget, but we're not comparing it to anything. So I think it's a really, really good step in the right direction because the lack of testing, internal testing within a lot of corporations has led towards people believing the sales brochures and thinking they're fact. One of the things that we did at InfoWorld during these shootouts is we'd go and say, hey, if you're publishing statistics, we're going to confirm them. And that's, I think, what needs to happen in the industry. There's an awful lot of marketing claims that aren't being verified. And I think having tools like this where a corporation or an organization can go and run their own benchmarks, I strongly encourage them, run your own benchmarks. Make sure that those claims are really and truly legit. But to the testing people, don't forget, you need to have baselines. You know, any good scientific methodology means you have to have a control group. And so you guys going to need a little bit more work, but I think it's a great step.
Right. Now, Kurt, I want to go over to you because I think Cheebert brings up a good point. Obviously, a lot of organizations tend to trust these cloud providers out there, whether they're hybrid or in a hybrid environment or not, that their performance is going to hold up and their SLA is going to hold up. What do you think from an organization? Is this coming back into popularity where people should start testing this, maybe even kind of just-in-time performance testing using that control group that Cheebert's talking about?
Well, I definitely think that people should be testing their performance. And in many cases, there are some independent testing organizations out there that will do it for you. I'm a big fan of benchmarks. I spent well over half my career developing and running benchmark tests. I'll agree with Brian. I think this one is a good first step. Benchmarks are tricky things because if you do a broad benchmark that says, here's how the entire system performs, then you very quickly get into questions of how the system is configured. Are you really comparing apples to apples across two different tests, or are you just comparing system configurations rather than systems? The only way around that is to write a benchmark that breaks apart the infrastructure that you're testing and can tell you how different pieces of that infrastructure perform. And frankly, given the way that modern cloud applications are built, that's going to be pretty much impossible. So I think this is a first step. I think that it is going to benefit from people in the open source community building on top of this. And I wish them the best luck. I mean, I certainly think this is hands down better than a lot of the other benchmarks that are out there that were developed for things that were not cloud-based but are now being run in the cloud.
Right. Achieber, I want to throw it to you for the last question here, because I think that the interesting thing here is what I'm reading through a lot of this. It's saying, hey, this is mainly for large enterprises that have multiple services, maybe even hybrid clouds, to kind of understand the benchmarks based off of those different services. But do we need this for other types of configurations as well?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The mom-and-pop store that has moved to cloud-based point of sale or cloud-based inventory or cloud-based this or that, they don't have a way of getting a benchmark. And this system, as good as it sounds, requires an awful lot of infrastructure. There's a lot of assumed in this. And so in my wish list, I happen to like the old program called Webload. The basic thing is, the vast majority of stuff that's going into the cloud has a web interface on it of some sort. It might front end a SQL server. It might front end a Hadoop server. Doesn't matter. The vast majority is web-based. So wouldn't it be great if I had a tool that didn't cost the king's ransom where I could go and record a web session and then modify that script, have little boxes I can put in so I can put some randomization, I could put some acceptable fields, I could put acceptable users, acceptable credentials, and so forth, and be able to run those and have, so if I've got a customer yelling at me saying, oh, this is, your system's broken, it's horrible, I have a way of running some simulated users and be able to go and find out what's going on. I think that's missing. Personally, I think something like this needs to be open source. I think it needs to be some sort of public service that maybe gets their income from ad sales or something like that. But yeah, this is the small organization. Okay. They are definitely underrepresented, and I think we need something. And now that we can't get magazines being paid to do these, because magazine reviews are almost gone, I think we're going to need something else. Something has to fill that void for testing.
Right. Well, hopefully this is just the tip of the iceberg and we'll see some additional improvements. Like you said, you gave some good ideas out there. So hopefully somebody will pick them up and run with them. Well, folks, it does it for that bite. But, during the pandemic, there have been some studies going around showing some new trends. And there's some new ones actually outlining InfoSec job training trends. Curtis, what are some of those trends?
In fact, some new trends. And that's a good thing because, as we know, when things change, the most successful organizations and organisms are those who can learn from the new environment and adapt to new requirements. So in the age of COVID-19, what lessons are InfoSec professionals wanting and able to learn? I sat down with the CEO and co-founder of Cybrary, an online training, security training library, to talk about the trends that they've seen. And there were five that really stood out. Some of these, I think we would say, well, of course that's happened. Others are maybe a bit counterintuitive. Let's see what you think. Trend number one, there's more hunger for hands-on skills. They said that hiring managers are asking for potential employees who have demonstrable skills. Now, that's as opposed to just a certificate. They often have pieces of the interview process that involve demonstrating their ability to do something. And so people who are thinking about going up the ladder or switching careers want to be able to prove that they can perform a task. Now, as I mentioned just a second ago, the flip side of that is that there is less interest in certifications. He said that he has seen it go down to where now only 20% of the classes and courses that people are taking have to do with preparing for a cert test. That's as opposed to 80% looking at those hard hands-on skills that are more of a career path skill. In particular, said individual students during this time seem much more interested in learning new skills than in learning some of the very specific answers to questions that would be required for cert prep. Now, interest in certification classes has not gone away completely. It's just gone way down. Now, when I talked to the CEO, he says that he frankly thinks that this could be a longer-term trend. Candidates are more interested in the skills that they can demonstrate rather than the certificate they can show. Okay, so trend number three, this new career that everyone is talking about, everybody wants to be a SOC analyst. Now, that means that Security Operations Center analysts, whether this is something that they're going into as a level one analyst or trying to go higher up the ladder, is a job category that has seen a dramatic increase in interest since the beginning of the year. And as I said, this goes across all levels. Why would this be so? One of the reasons is that SOC analyst roles exist both within normal businesses and normal enterprises and in managed security service providers, or MSSPs, who bring SOC analysts together and have them serve the needs of many different clients. One way or another, SOC analyst is seen as a job with a long, bright future, and a lot of people want to get in on that. So if more people want to become SOC analysts, what do fewer people want to become? Pen testers. Apparently, penetration testing is one of those things that is at least temporarily down on the list of things companies are doing. And as individuals have seen their companies doing fewer pen tests, the interest in becoming a pen tester has gone down. It's going to be really interesting to see how that particular job and the people wanting to get into the field change as this pandemic goes along and with any luck at all begins to lighten. So finally, across all of these fields, cloud security is rising to the top. Whether we're talking about IT infrastructure, network design, or security analyst, being able to say you have cloud skills is something that everybody seems to want to have on their resume. So those are the five that I had found. I want to turn to my co-host. Lou, let me ask you first. Have you heard anything about trends in particular skills or languages or ways to do things that people are wanting to train for since the pandemic began?
You know, it's interesting because you said that pen testing is on the downfall. And I actually talked to a lot of people, even people that I work with, young people who have come into the company or even just people who have been for a while. And a lot of their interests are in the security side of things. And when it comes to penetration testing, I think it's just interesting to see that even with the remote workforce increase and this current time, that people wouldn't want to be interested in more of that, because obviously there's a lot more of that going around. So I'm seeing an increased interest, at least on my side, around security and penetration testing. And in fact, a lot of the great sessions I've actually listened to online and some of the meetings I've been in with other organizations have been around that, around like, okay, you know, let's figure out if there's a potential breach capability. It also brings back the memory of the days of the movie Sneakers, where they, you know, used to do penetration testing. And again, that seems to have scaled even today's technology. And so I'm actually surprised to hear that that's on the downfall.
Well, it is interesting. And before I ask a question of Brian, let me ask you one more. If you were advising someone, what skill or skills do you think people should learn that would be useful as we go through and hopefully beyond the pandemic?
You know, I think as more businesses move to the cloud, kind of understanding, you know, all the different cloud offerings and the services and how they all piece together is actually important knowledge here when it comes to when you get an offering or when you get a job, because it means that, you know, you need to understand how these services can be put together into a piece of software, how you can actually support it thereafter, how you can scale it. And obviously, we actually have a guest later that's going to talk to us a little about a lot of that. But again, having that knowledge is super important here, especially from a security perspective, is how we understand how we're going to secure these services and how we're going to maintain security and ensure that we're using good practices. So I think going into that and learning those things is actually really important. Obviously, I'm a developer, I'm a programmer, and obviously learning languages is also helpful. And so, you know, pinpointing languages that could actually help you develop on these platforms as well is another thing that could really help scale your expertise.
Great advice. Great advice. Well, Brian, I want to turn to you because you have advised a lot of students and people on the early sides of their careers through the year. What would you advise someone to be learning right now? If someone said, you know, I've got a little bit of time here because of the pandemic, how should they be spending that time? What should they be learning to prepare them to succeed as we move through and beyond COVID-19?
My big suggestion is don't forget the plumbing. The reality is I've talked to many, many young security professionals. And the problem is they don't spend that much time learning how the infrastructure works, how the network works. I actually had this one young person that insisted a VLAN was secure. It's like, no, it's just a tag. You need to have a wider view. My big bitch, or whatever you want to call it, is security experts actually need to be generalists. They can't be specialists. There's a lot of things that happen in the infrastructure that can be abused and used against you if you're not paying attention. I can't tell you how many times I've gone into a corporation and they said, oh, well, let me on to your Wi-Fi so I can go look something up. And then I'll go run just something like an SNMP query across the subnet that they let me on. And I can't tell you how many things are SNMP write permission of public. You know, it's like, you guys forgot something. There needs to be some concentration on the plumbing of your network, because unfortunately that's where a lot of security holes do exist, and you need to be more generalist.
You know, I agree with that completely, and I'll go a step farther, because I think when you talk about the plumbing, not nearly enough people are interested in understanding what it takes to do dynamite layer one stuff. You know, study what Bixie has. Find out what is required to become RCDD. You know, these are things, you know, if you can terminate cable, if you know the limits of the physical infrastructure, you're way ahead of most people in the industry. This is one of those things that is constant. And I really didn't get a chance to ask whether you think this is long term or something that's just changing for the duration of the pandemic. I'd love to hear from the Twilight Riot on that. And so you know, send us your comments in any of the myriad ways you can do that. But before we hear your comments, we've got to go through the rest of our show, and we're going to turn it back over to Lou to take us in that direction.
Thank you, Kurt. Well, next up is my favorite part of the show. We get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. But before we get to that, we have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Worldwide Technology and AppDynamics. Now, together, they enable you to deliver the application experience your customers demand today. Now, WWT offers you solutions that will transform your business. Great software has the ability to change lives, right? Well, WWT is driven as a custom application design and development company. They will help you identify your specific business needs, how to approach problems in new ways, and will create software solutions that make a huge impact. Now, in fact, now if you're probably wondering how effective WWT has been in the different markets, listen to some of these. WWT actually worked with a healthcare organization to connect medical teams from their care center to patients at home. In fact, WWT created a custom software app where care teams can interface with their patients. Now, within a year, they started seeing results. Now, here are some of the results. 50% reduction in preventable readmissions for their engagement at home patients. In fact, 35% fewer days spent in the hospital with virtual care, and 60% fewer septic shock deaths occurred in patients being treated remotely. Now, in another part of the market, WWT worked with a rental car company to produce a mobile app that improved customer car rental experiences, but actually allowing the customers to make reservations, perform check-ins, and returns without waiting in line. Now, another example would definitely hit close to home with some of the people. WWT worked with a grocery retailer to improve customer experience through ideation and innovation and creative work. WWT actually improved their customer experience, and the grocery retailer hit their 2- and 3-year goals in less than a year. Now, you want your customers to use your app with ease, so put something in their hands that exceeds their expectations. WWT's processes are like no other. They have agile software development from planning and ideation to delivery. WWT develops solutions for a variety of end users that are better than what they could have envisioned. Now, DevOps, they also have DevOps. They drive business outcomes by evaluating, designing, and implementing and operating with tools to enhance your operational efficiency. And they also have container platforms. They rapidly create services that can create and scale and perform by designing and architecting and implementing cloud-native apps in an agile fashion. Solve your toughest challenges with the experts. Transform your business today with WWT. They can help you change your business with apps that yield great user experiences, attract new clients, and increased customer value. Go to WWT.com/twit1. That's WWT.com/twit1. WWT, delivering business outcomes and modernizing IT infrastructure. And we thank WWT and AppDynamics for their support of This Week and Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now my favorite part of the show. We get to kick off our 400th episode with a great guest segment. And today we have Mr. Ohad Maislish, CEO and co-founder of M0. Ohad, thank you for being here, especially during your late hours.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
So before we kind of get into all the enterprise goodness that we have here, our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. Can you maybe take us through a short journey through tech and how you ended up at M0?
Oh, well, my background is all about technical. I'm a proud geek, so I'm now 38 years old, but actually I started university at a young age, at the age of 14, in parallel to high school. And then at the age of 17, I joined a small company named Microsoft that I know you know about it. And ever since, I've been working at, infrastructure, backend, automation, that's always been my focus. And in the last few years, I shifted from being an engineer and engineering manager to being an entrepreneur. So this is my second startup and third company. In between, I had services company, and then You know, I saw a lot of interesting opportunities in cloud infrastructure. We turned to establish M0.
Fantastic. Now, I'm excited about today's topic because it's a really hard problem for a lot of organizations out there. They have hybrid cloud infrastructure. Mm-hmm. They need to constantly scale it. And they have really complex environments kind of, you know, that they need to create. Can you maybe take us through some of the challenges some of the organizations are seeing with all of this?
Yeah, sure. So applications became much more complicated in the last few years. There have been a few shifts, like the shift from analytics to microservices, the shift to cloud native. So, you know, I used to work on a simple CRM that was a Java monolith and MySQL server. That's it. But now probably you're going to have hundreds of small microservices, each from different types. You have VMs, containers orchestration, such as Kubernetes, serverless, platform as a service, even, you know, SaaS vendors that are part of your app. For example, maybe you wrote your own SMTP code in order to send emails, but probably now you use some SaaS vendor like SendGrid or Mailgun. Same goes for authentication. You probably use Auth0 or Okta. So all of that is part of your application. So applications became much more complicated, and there are a lot of challenges around that. So how you provide self-service for somebody in your organization that needs all cloud services, how you manage and automate all that process. So as applications became much more complicated, also the process and management around it became much more complicated.
Right, you're right. I think a lot of organizations out there, they're building applications, they're building services, they're using IaaS, using infrastructure as a service. And I, you know, even me, I've used infrastructure as a service, even infrastructure as code. Like I've built strategies for both AWS, Cloud Foundation, Azure Resource Manager. Their APIs are different for both of them, right? So if you have a hybrid cloud, it kind of creates a complex environment. How are teams managing this today? What are they doing?
And the simple answer is Terraform. So you mentioned CloudFormation and ARM. So yeah, they're limited to one single vendor. And if you want a multi-cloud solution, there are a few options out there, but there is one big, common, with great ecosystem, great community named Terraform. So, you know, Terraform is the biggest trend in infrastructure as code. And it's amazing how many companies have started using Terraform in order to provision cloud resources.
Right. Now, there was another player in that too, Pulumi, I think they're called. They're kind of doing some. I think they're a little smaller, right? They're not as a big player as Terraform.
They're more innovative, so they're doing similar things to Terraform, but they're a bit behind the community and you know just the penetration regarding the market. But all in all, they're trying to do the same, with an interesting approach of instead of complicated YAML files that you need to learn their format, let's try to do that simpler using you know the native languages that programmers already know, like Node and Python and stuff like that. So yeah, you have several options, but currently Terraform is the big winner. It might change, but currently that's the situation.
So now the interesting part here, how does M0 kind of come into play here?
Yeah, cool. So once you have infrastructure as code, it's like a new interesting weapon. It can easily create a lot of damage. It's also shift left for infrastructure decisions for developers. So now developers can influence much more. The infrastructure decisions can execute that code and can easily create a lot of damage. It can be around security, but specifically it can be super easy to create cost damage. So, you know, you can create a lot of resources, expensive resources, running that for too long time and causing a lot of harm for your company in the financial aspect. So M0 is about providing the self-service for the employees, mainly developers, but anyone that needs cloud resources, while having a combined governance for this process. So making sure you're creating only the needed resources and needed, for the time frame, with the certain budget that you get, and manage all that process. We've seen a shift. We call it the shift from CapEx cloud to OpEx cloud, because a few years ago, probably if you're a private data center like VMware or Nutanix, you bought hardware and licenses, and that's basically what you pay for. With the shift to the cloud, you pay as you go, but also in that, there is another shift, because for VMs, for example, you know you're going to pay $80 a month for a single VM instance, but how much you're going to pay for Lambda? How much you're going to pay for BigQuery? How much you're going to pay for auto-scaling group Kubernetes cluster? You really don't know. It depends on the usage. So big companies just worry about that and limit developers to open tickets if they need some cloud infrastructure instead of making the developers more efficient, which is crucial to win your competition.
Right. Well, when we come back, I do want to talk a little bit more how this kind of all fits together, and also want to bring my co-host back in. But before we get to that, I do want to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is Red Hat OpenShift. Now, when I say the Red Hat name, a lot of you probably think Linux, right? Well, that's how the company first made its name, its Linux distros that serve thousands of enterprise customers for well over 8.0 releases. But what Red Hat did for Linux is now doing for container orchestration with Red Hat OpenShift. Now, Red Hat OpenShift combines the best of Kubernetes with additional features like service mesh, operators, serverless technology, and more. Now, out of all of these, it helps developers and sysadmins do their work with greater ease and automation. Now, that means no downloads or configuration required to get your hands on a cluster. And what's more is the tutorials that they have out there are actually not gated. And you don't have to give your contact information, so no one else is going to contact you or email you afterwards when you go through them. Now, for those of you who have heard of OpenShift and want to give it a try, Red Hat has set up a free interactive learning portal with pre-configured OpenShift instances accessible right from your browser. Try it out right now. Now is the time to check out container technology and orchestrations, and you can use those easy pre-configured instances right away. So if you're curious about Red Hat OpenShift and how it works and want to check out its features, go to openshift.com/enterprise. That is openshift.com/enterprise. And we thank Red Hat OpenShift for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now, before I bring my co-host back in, I did want to get to a couple more things, especially around this whole concept of managing things. Now, I know a lot of developers who build on top of services, and obviously that encapsulates a bunch of infrastructure that goes along with it. And you were saying, hey, this we provide a way for developers to scale this. So, like, let's say I'm seeing some increased traffic on my front end, which is causing load on my back end. Now, if I want to just go and say, hey, I want to increase the scale of both different layers, do I do that programmatically? Do I go to some kind of console to do that? How does this kind of work for me?
I think nowadays nobody goes to any console. You mentioned Red Hat with OpenShift. There is another great thing by Red Hat, which is Ansible. And I think the combination of Ansible and Terraform becomes the standard today for the two layers, provisioning and configuration. So we see only read access to cloud accounts, and everything is being done through code. So if you need to change something in the hardware, you probably need to change something in your infrastructure as code, such as Terraform. And if you need to change something applicative, good chances you're going to need to change some line in Ansible. So those are the two layers of how you provision and then configure your resources.
Now, the interesting thing is you said, developers don't have to necessarily worry about costs. Is that true? Is the developers not shouldn't really worry about the cost here, cloud costs, or are you worrying about it for them? Or are you providing them insights into it?
I think today the cost process, it's kind of a waterfall process. Okay, developers decide on the architecture, then they run something, and then somebody else gets the bill, okay? And that's often called the cloud bill shock, okay? Once a month, you get the cloud bill and you get into the shock. Where did that come from? So developers currently, they do not care. But I think, I worked at a company that got acquired by VMware like 13, 14 years ago. And it was an application performance monitoring before New Relic. And back then, developers didn't care about performance as well. Okay, so they just wrote code and deployed it. And then if there was a performance problem, someone will tell them hopefully sometime. Okay, but performance shifted left totally with products like New Relic and Datadog and also another sponsor, AppDynamics. So that shifted left the performance because there was a need to do shorter cycles in order to prevent problems in performance. By the way, same goes with security and licenses and a lot of other things. But with the shift to cloud, and specifically the shift to OpEx cloud and on-demand pricing, according to usage, we see that currently just companies don't want to give that freedom for developers to create cloud resources. They tell them open tickets and we will approve it manually or very limited. So we think if developers can delegate some of the responsibility and have shared responsibility on the cost together with the DevOps teams, that will build more trust and eventually will end up in much bigger efficiency for the developers to being able to provision in self-service kind of way their needed resources.
Right. I do want to bring my co-host back in. Over to you, Chibert, first.
Okay, I'm an academic. One of the big frustrations I've had is I'm seeing a trend, or at least a snapshot of the industry, and it almost seems like developers, operations, security have been in silos for way too long, and there's still this us against them attitude that I keep seeing. It sounds like you're bridging some gaps. Do you think we need to do better? Put on your crystal ball and tell us.
Yeah, I'm sure we can. I'm sure we can do better. I remember on a personal note, about 7 years ago, I worked at a company and I needed two Windows virtual machines. So I opened the ticket and I assume it will be handled within a few hours. But then I got the craziest response I will never forget. It was like a 200 employees company. It wasn't a small company. But the answer I got after a few hours was, I'm sorry. It was from the head of IT. He said, I'm sorry, but the person in charge of provisioning Windows VMs just went to Mexico to his honeymoon, and he'll be back in 4 weeks. So you need to wait 4 weeks for your virtual machines. And it was so crazy to hear that kind of an answer. Long story short, I got myself personal access to, in that case, vSphere VMware platform and provisioned my own, because I said it's impossible to wait for 4 weeks to get two VMs. But according to, back to your question, yeah, the fact that developers cannot wait 4 weeks for orchestrating two resources, they're getting frustrated. And I think, unlike 7 years ago, now the DNA of organization, it's clear that things, are decided bottom up from the developers. You cannot tell the developers how to work. It goes vice versa. Developers decide on the processes and they'll then, bring that to the rest of the company. And the ideal is to have shared responsibility. It's not us against them. We are all in the same boat. So let's think about the goals we have. And each person, each team will say what's important for each team. And there are great solutions if we just, design it accordingly.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in automation and things like that. I've only started this recently to see it. Like, I budget for a certain amount of resources. I want to have a self-service, but the self-service has been cumbersome. So I guess I'm going to ask you another crystal ball question. Are we getting better at the self-service and delegation of authority so that we can get the infrastructure out of the way of doing business?
So my personal feeling is that the problem just got bigger. As I mentioned, the application got more complicated. So probably, and again, back to my example, 7 years ago, I opened a ticket for two virtual machines. Okay, it's a simple task to orchestrate two virtual machines. Now, I'm going to need 500 different microservices from different types, SaaS vendors, accounts. I'm going to need much more complicated ticket in order to be able to work and do the basic things. So, moving to cloud native, it's a great thing because operational aspect is much better for you to run your application. It's more efficient, it's faster, it's cheaper. It's a lot of things are running better when you use the ideal type of resource for you. But if you have such big variety of resources, each one from different type, and you need a lot of those, the basic simple developer that just need a working system for being able to develop code has a much more problematic situation now when they open the tickets, because the tickets became much more complicated. Therefore, the self-service, in my opinion at least, decreased because it's more difficult to serve those tickets.
All right. Well, thanks, Chibert. I want to throw it over to Kurt as well. Kurt?
Thanks so much. I've got a couple of questions, and one of them involves, you know, typical use cases. It seems to me that this is the sort of thing that can be used in a couple of ways. One is for, say, a development team to use it to develop their own environment, something that can be replicated and automated to allow them to go through iteration after iteration and set up things on a repeatable basis. The other way would be for development management to basically set up a box in which development would happen so that the developers can't lose control or forget an instance and have it run off and just, you know, develop charges for days and days and days. In your experience,
days is a good example.
Are both of these the way it's being used, or is one more predominant than the other?
I think those two are very common. There are even a few more scenarios. But yeah, to make sure you can work for the regular developer and make sure you do it, you know, with the certain control that the organization needs. We often hear organizations tell us we need better visibility, predictability, and governance. Okay, the developer doesn't care about that. The developers just care about being efficient and do their work and not being frustrated waiting for somebody else. But, you know, the organization, the managers, they care about visibility, predictability, and governance. And the example you've mentioned about running resources and forgetting to destroy those, it happened to anyone I know, anyone including myself, that you're embarrassed. After, I remember an example, I looked at resources 8 months after I created those, and I needed those resources for 10 minutes. And looking at those resources 8 months after I created those was so embarrassing. But you know, that's how cloud works. You create resources and they don't manage that. They're taking care of the infrastructure. You need to take care of the process. So that's what M0 is about, when, you know, looking at the business needs and organizational needs, like a simple scenario of tearing down unneeded resources.
Well, the last question that I have, you see a lot of things, especially in the development world, where the management of the resources is crucial. Kubernetes is all about managing the containers. As you look at all of these different systems that are out there for managing development resources, do you think that what we have now is a system of competing management platforms, or have we just seen a development where each one gets better than the last, and people really should move what they do to the newer platforms rather than hanging on to some of the pioneers?
That's a great question. I think Kubernetes has a lot of advantages. Okay, it's, you know, both the infrastructure and management, but also, you know, combining the application with the infrastructure. Okay, you can define the things related for infrastructure, networking, and your application containers. So the way that you can do both at the same place is very powerful. I've read few articles about, you know, what kind of resources you should use. So if you need compute, if you need something to run in the background, now Kubernetes looks like the best solution. If you need something on demand, go serverless. But there is also a better thing. If you don't need to write your code, if somebody has already written that code, like I said, SendGrid or Auth0, are great examples, or Stripe for payments. You don't need to write your code, so use SaaS. So I think now, but again, I think every year that might change the conclusion, but for now, you're probably going to need to decide one of three things, and the combination of those three is the most powerful. So it's Kubernetes, serverless, and SaaS in order to build your application.
Right, right. Well, Ohad, thank you so much for being here, especially on our 400th episode. We really appreciate you being here.
Thank you. And congratulations for so many episodes.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we're running a little bit low on time, but I did want to give you a chance to maybe tell the folks at home where their organization, where they can go to learn more about M0.
Yeah, sure. So if you use infrastructure as code, if you use Terraform, I think you'll find very interesting what we're doing. So browse to www.m0.com and, you know, just try it out. It's a free trial, also freemium tier for low usage. So just try the product and contact us. We'd love any feedback.
Fantastic. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the best dang enterprise podcast in the universe. So just tune your device to Twiat. We've had 400 amazing episodes, and we're looking to continue to do and give you some great content. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host. We couldn't have done the 400 episodes without these guys, especially starting with our very own Mr. Brian Chi. He's our producer. He's our co-host. He's our mantra. He's everything. He's the guy. Where can people find you, Chiber, and where can they go and maybe get in touch with you about show potential future shows?
Well, on Twitter, I'm ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab, or I'm Chibert at twit.tv. But better yet, why don't you use Twiat at twit.tv, and that email will hit all the hosts. We'd love to hear your show ideas. And oh, by the way, everybody, Padre sends his congratulations on 400 episodes to his geeky buddies.
That's right. There's my wife's cake. Thank you to her for that amazing cake as well. Well, folks, we definitely have to thank Mr. Curtis Franken. He's one of the most knowledgeable journalists I know, especially in the enterprise and IT space. Curtis, thank you so much. Can you maybe tell the folks at home where the people can find you and all of your work?
Well, thank you for the kind words, Lou. It's great being part of this team. And as for finding my work, darkreading.com is where it happens, especially over at the edge of Dark Reading, where I get to do a little bit longer piece, a little bit more in-depth. I've got a bunch of interviews coming up, a bunch of things leading up to Black Hat and DEF CON, as well as some hands-on stuff. I'm going to be looking at some of the open source tools that are available to deal with network visibility and security, and talking about the ways to make sure you get the most from those. To find out when I'm publishing those, keep an eye on my Twitter feed at KG4GWA or on Instagram. I'm Kurt_Franklin. I look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you, Curtis. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You are the person who drops in each and every week, all 400 episodes, to get your enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you and to catch up on your enterprise and IT news going forward. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twiat. There you'll find all of our amazing back episodes, the show notes, the co-host information, the guest information, as well as the links that we do about the stories during our show. But more importantly, next to those videos, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio or video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices or any one of your podcast applications. We're on all of them. So check it out and go subscribe to Twiat, especially. It's the best way to stay on top of your enterprise and IT news. Now, after you subscribe, impress your friends, your family, your coworkers with the gift of Twiat. It really is the best way to stay on top of your enterprise and IT news, and they can also benefit from it as well. Now, after you subscribe, if you're available during the days on Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time, we do this show live. Come see how the pizza's made. Come see the behind the scenes, all the everything that goes on at live.twit.tv. We're on there live right now. And you can come see all the banter that we have and all the fun stuff that we do here on Twit. Plus, if you're going to watch the show live, you might as well jump into the chat room live as well as irc.twit.tv there. We have some amazing characters in there, some really great discussions we've had today. Thank you to everybody who's in there and all their support. We really love doing this show, especially when we have a live chat room. But if you can't watch the show live, you can't be in the chat room live, that's okay, because you can still be part of an amazing community still. Come join the 24/7 discussion. The community has great conversations out there at twit.com. Twit.community, another great website. All the hosts are out there. All the Twit community is out there. Content, guest information, discussions about technology is really kind of a great place to have that 24/7 discussion. So check it out right now. Come join the community at Twit.community. Remember, you can always follow me, Twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all my latest and greatest enterprise tidbits. Especially, I have great conversations with people like you. And of course, I post some of the stuff I do at Microsoft on my daily basis. So come check that out. You can also check out developers.microsoft.com/office to see the latest and greatest ways to customize your office experience to make it more productive for you and your organization. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support us each and every week to do This Week in Enterprise Tech, and we couldn't have done any episodes, let alone 400 episodes without them. So thank you to all their support. And of course, thank you to all the engineers and staff at Twit. We couldn't have done all this without them, and we really appreciate all of their support. One more time, I want to thank Mr. Brian Chi. He's our co-host and our tireless producer. He does all the show bookings and the plannings for the show. And again, none of these shows would happen without his support. So thanks again, Chibert, and happy birthday. I wish we could sing happy birthday in here for you. and before I sign out, of course, I have to thank our TD. Of course, I want to thank our editor as well, Victor, because he's been with us for a long time, and we really appreciate all his support. But I also want to thank Jeff. You continue to deal with our blips and our mishaps and all that stuff, and it made it look seamless. And behind the scenes, we really appreciate all his support. Jeff, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I absolutely love it. It's great. You guys are incredible host. I love doing this show. I remember when I first came into it, I was really nervous because of all the tech talk you guys did and, you know, trying to keep up with you. But man, I absolutely love it and look forward to it every Friday at this point. And I do want to thank Victor too. He's such a great mentor on, you know, he ran this show for a long time and he really guided me on how to do all the operations. And now I have it all down and, well, pretty much, you know, and I just love it. So thank you guys every week for putting it together. And I'll be here next Friday, absolutely loving it.
Well, there you have it, folks. The better Victor, Jeff. I'm just kidding, Victor.
Victor is awesome.
Definitely appreciate that Victor is awesome. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep twine.
Hey folks, I'm Micah Sargent, host of Hands on iOS right here on the Twit Network. If you've got iOS devices or watchOS devices or tvOS device, any kind of Apple mobile device, you are going to want to check out Hands on iOS. It is the best way to make the most of those devices. I walk through tips, tricks, and everything in between, plus answer your questions. So be sure to check it out. It's twit.tv/HOI.